Welcome to Idle Red Hands Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Chris.
And what is Idle Red Hands Weekly? It is a period of civil wars in the galaxy. A brave alliance of underground freedom fighters has challenged the tyranny and oppression of the awesome galactic empire. Striking from fortresses hidden among the billions of stars of the galaxy, rebel spaceships have won their first victory in a battle with the powerful Imperial Starfleet. The Empire fears that another defeat could bring thousands of more solar systems into the rebellion, and Imperial control over the galaxy will be lost forever. To crush the rebellion, once and for all, the Empire is constructing a sinister new battle station. Powerful enough to destroy an entire planet, its completion spells certain doom for the champions of freedom.
I'm slightly embarrassed. It took me until the second line to realize where that came from.
And that is actually the original version, the George Lucas penned version of the opening crawl. So
not the actual opening crawl. Yeah. Oh, the one that we see.
Yeah, that's not the one we see. This was his first version. And when he screened it for Spielberg and De Palma, they were like, what is this? This is garbage. And De Palma actually rewrote the opening. It's just very odd. And I think he was going for the serial kind of adventure, but it reads very strange. Yeah, it's long and clumsy. The one that you know kind of have in your head is much more elegant and kind of gets to the point really fast and mentions characters and things.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
So it was edited. And I guess Brian De Palma and then another film critic or somebody gave their input and kind of changed things a little bit to make it more. I thought that was really funny. It reminded me of why did they hand the prequel trilogy to him completely? Because he wasn't ever able to make a movie on his own. He needed so much help.
Was it help? Because, I mean, obviously other people were working on the original trilogy.
Right.
But from what I understand, they were also working with like a lot of deadlines and like tight budgets and stuff, which I think probably also aided in the creative process and stuff where you got to go, this is good enough, or this is all we can do, or we have to do something within these limitations, which I find for me helps my creativity just kind of like, you know, especially a deadline. If you give someone like a blank check.
Right.
It's almost like, well, I can do whatever I want. And then things occasionally bloat.
So many stories about, especially the first movie being saved in editing, like looking at the first cut of it, people are like, this is unwatchable. This is so boring. This is shot, reverse shot. This is, you know, filmed like a soap opera. Why, you know, why would anybody want to watch this? And his first wife was actually, you know, one of the editors responsible for saving it and making it the new style of movie that, you know, people kind of became addicted to. But I just think it's funny. And it still boggles my mind. And now it's a moot point. I mean, he handed that entire franchise over to committee, and now it's going to be run by, you know, Disney, the Disney overlords. He's a funny guy because his opinions are very mixed. I think he works well under pressure, but he physically doesn't work well under pressure. Like, I think creatively, when he didn't have enough money and people didn't believe in him, I think more interesting ideas came out of him.
Right.
And then when he could do whatever he wanted and things were just kind of bloated, he just dropped the ball. So I don't know.
Or he didn't drop the ball and just his vision of what the movies should be was not very good.
Yeah, right. As opposed to in the late 70s when that came out and people were tired of the anti-hero and kind of these gray things. It's like, this is black and white. This is good versus evil. And then when he tried to tell a more complicated story, maybe people were hungry for, well, can this just be good and evil? Why does this have to be so nuanced?
Well, maybe don't make a trilogy about boring-ass trade wars that don't mean anything. Right.
In negotiation.
Yeah.
So this week, actually, probably before this is online, we will be doing the third session and probably the last session of the Alien RPG.
Depending how it goes. Yes. How many ones we roll on those panic dice.
Right. I think we're going to get, because the third act is pretty fast and dirty. So we'll see.
Well, the first act, I didn't feel it dragged at all. Mm-hmm. It was certainly less action-packed than the second.
Right.
Or at least for us. And the second was full of a lot of bickering.
Right. Let's go here. Let's do this. No. Yeah. There was a lot of inaction. It's like, should I force this? Should I just have somebody get randomly attacked? Or let's just see what happens. But I'm still really surprised as a group. I mean, I think it's such a good group. And I don't know if it's the group or the writing of the cinematic adventure. You guys are catching on to all the hooks. People have ideas and they say things out loud. And they're catching on to every kind of possibility that the adventure is kind of accounting for and kind of getting you ready for. So as I see people mention things like, wow, that's great.
I obviously don't want to spoil this. I had planned to run this adventure, because it's the only one that exists right now, for the Kansai International RPG Day at the end of the month. Mm-hmm. That got pushed back, but prior to that, I actually reread the module, or parts of the module again, like the characters, and I figured since we were past Act 1, I actually went back and looked at Act One. Didn't spoil anything else. Once this is over, I would be very curious to hear what that was.
Oh, okay.
Because, like, I wonder if it is writing for the module, if it is the group that we're playing in, or if it's obviously a combination of the two, or if it's something to do with we're playing Alien the RPG. I mean, you know, this is a horror game, and there have been how many movies of it now?
Right.
And kind of falling back on horror movie tropes, where we the players are going, okay, is this pointing to something in the future?
Mm-hmm.
We're trying, I imagine, trying not to metagame. We also know we're playing a horror game, and you kind of have to get your characters involved.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like, oh, hey, what are those ominous looking gouges in the metal bulkhead? Mm-hmm. And, well, I guess we're going to have to investigate it.
Right.
We as players know we're going to have to go look into that. Even if the characters want to be like, yeah, no, we're out. It's interesting finding reasons to, I guess, pursue those hooks in character.
Yeah. No, I think that's good. People have done a good job. And I think that that is an interesting thing, especially when you know it's horror ahead of time. And, you know, so you're setting up, you know, this setting, and you're kind of trying to figure out how to believably make your character navigate it and have it mesh. And also having to deal with your agendas.
Yeah.
So your agendas being something that you have to kind of play to as well. So, and it's funny because I can hear people kind of lean into that. They're like, I really want to do this, but I need to be doing this. Because we were talking about sound effects and music in the previous weekly episode, and somebody brought up in a comment that, yeah, they think in Alien, music and sound effects works really well. Mm. And I was thinking, like, yeah, of course, yeah, if you play a Star Wars RPG, you want Star Wars music.
Oh, yeah.
That will put you right in that setting. Instead of, you know, generic sci-fi or generic fantasy, when you're playing a known IP and having that actual music there, the actual themes and the sound effects really does add to the immersion. I think it works well.
Sound effects, definitely, because I actually brought in my DVDs of Alien and Alien 2, because there's no plural in Japanese, to the break room, because they have a DVD player. I just queued it up. I spent like half an hour before my shift watching the beginning of Aliens. But I'm kind of stumped as to think of a music for either Alien or Aliens.
Mm-hmm.
But I can definitely think of sound effects.
Well, I think somebody did kind of a remix of some of the themes on the actual soundtrack. So the longer droning, especially the long tones of the opening credits of first Alien movie. Yeah, I thought that was a good point, and that it works better specifically, because then you're reminded and you're seeing those images of the films and kind of like seeing your character much more there. So
yeah, that's definitely a way to get into the whatever licensed property you're playing.
Anything this week?
Not really, because work's full on, apart from learning more of Affinity, which is pretty decent, and the PDFs I'm generating are a lot more lightweight than what they come out on InDesign. I think I'm hitting a little bit of a wall in terms of trying to select stuff, or just the placement of windows. Like, I kind of get tripped up, like, where is that again? It's just something I have to learn, but it's a little bit frustrating because my knowledge doesn't translate over completely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was looking at what runs on an iPad Pro, and Affinity is one of the things that they made. So they're going to be releasing full Photoshop, I think, this summer.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, but still it's like, I don't know if I would much prefer, and especially because it's probably going to be a subscription. It's probably not going to be a single purchase. So it's software as service that I'm not a big fan of. So
especially when they can just take it back.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah, we don't support that anymore. So you don't own it.
Nothing gaming related, so I'm looking forward to tonight's Alien session.
Yeah.
How about yourself?
Be fun. Preparing for the session and not anything. There's no other, I think, props and sounds. I think I've done enough to to supplement things. So I think we're good. As far as the session, I'm just going to kind of, and maybe at the beginning, kind of go over a few of the rules that I wanted to clarify.
Okay.
Like we were talking about energy use for the motion tracker. And so there's a couple of roles that we missed, and probably should be doing more oxygen roles to kind of heighten the tension there.
Yeah, I was thinking about that, and you don't want to it's not throwing people under the bus, but when I play a game, I definitely try and take a step back and not be the GM.
Mm-hmm.
But I did notice that Lyle's character was at like one oxygen, and we had like a half hour conversation.
Right.
And I kept thinking, like, is he going to run out of O2?
Right.
And have to take, you know, his character have to take his helmet off. I'm like, it's been a while since we made one of those rules. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
And especially after the work of repairing the reactor would probably necessitate.
We kind of cut at the end of that, though. So we're like definitely going to make a roll for pretty much everything we use during that shift of work.
But as far as other gaming stuff, ordered a few kind of supplemental miniatures. So I've got some more Death Guard going on. And also pre-ordered The Lost and the Damned, the next Siege of Terra book.
Okay.
The great advantage about Japan and the Japanese Games Workshop website is we get things 16 hours.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I can pre-order stuff that's, you know, limited versions earlier. And because it's delivered to a Japanese address, you get a first crack at it.
I did not consider that. We're actually getting something before the rest of the world does for once.
And actually a little bit cheaper too.
Really?
If you convert the currency, the Japanese price is a little bit better. So I was, I'm happy about that. So I love those books. And I don't know if I'm ever going to talk about it. I mean, it might be something worth talking about, but the special edition books that they're doing are gorgeous. And the story is really good. It's really, you know, kind of Avengers Endgame feeling because it's tying up everything they've been doing for, what is it, like, you know, 8-9 years now with Horus Heresy?
Horus Heresy. I was like, Games Workshop's been around longer than that.
But it's tying all that up. And the really good thing that it's doing is the little characters and things it's teasing is making me want to go back and read books that I haven't read.
Oh, interesting.
And I think that's really well done. If that was intentional, I think that's brilliant because the series is going to end and then, you know, the next one's never coming out. But if you haven't read the whole thing, which there probably are a majority of people that haven't, there's incentive to kind of go back and fill in some of those holes. Because there's some good books in there that I haven't read. There's a lot of filler. I mean, in 50 novels, there's going to be some dog food.
Ouch. I was just going to say not as good, but okay.
Right. I'm really looking forward to that. And that comes out so far ahead of the actual like hardback release that it's fun, so I can read and then kind of be ahead of any spoilers or anything because people get online and spoil the heck out of that. But yeah, the bombardment of Terra is happening now. So first it was the kind of war in the solar system, and now they're here. And how they got here is just like holy. Yeah, it was great.
Holy. If they went through the warp, then yeah.
Really nice how things kind of connect together. Like they've been hinting at things, and you know they've been saying the siege of Terra. You know. Talking about Horus headed that way for so long. And finally, you know, those things are actually happening. So, yeah, it's good. And not quite as shaky as a prequel, you know, where you know where it's going. It's like, okay, get on with it.
Right. Because apart from mentioning like the Siege of Terra and like high level stuff about what happened at the end of that, no one's really told that story yet.
Right.
So it's all, I guess, you know, the outcome, but not maybe in the same way that a prequel, because it's just high level stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And it'll be interesting to see like, how those pieces kind of fall into place much more than I think with how Anakin Skywalker became Darth Vader. I think much more interesting.
Bring it back to Star Wars. Okay.
For future topics, kind of going back to talking about the cinematic adventure, kind of what we're doing in the alien setting. There was a funny comment on one of the actual play episodes that, you know, alarms, klaxon, strobe lights, and CO2 discharge, you know, during the self-destruction sequence is insane. That is so impractical. And in a situation where you need to find an escape pod, you're blinded, you can't hear anything, you can't see anything.
Oh, you're talking like,
you know, you do that sort of thing because it's cinematic and it films well, but practically that's ridiculous. That's a really a funny thing to actually, you know, be putting people in. But we're kind of doing that. And I kind of suggested that with the siren and everything with the light because we wanted to bring the tension up. But it is not very realistic.
It isn't. But I mean, I think it would be a different kind and possibly more difficult kind of tension to write if everything was rational and kind of laid out.
Mm.
And yeah, I don't know. Like, how exciting would it be to have to clomp down an empty hallway right. for only a few meters because they put the escape pods at a very logical point? You know, I mean, that's not all realistic. It might not be exciting to watch. And I'm sure there are ways you could make it exciting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm drawing a blank on what they would be.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's kind of fine to fall back on like action movie or horror movie tropes to increase that tension. Practical? Mm. No. But then again, we're dealing with like a creature that is like acid for blood, gestates in I don't know how many minutes and is fully formed in another hour or so. So realities doesn't really work here.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's true. I'm just wondering how different it will feel playing a regular campaign where you're going to be a little bit more precious about your characters as opposed to this cinematic, like you've got pre-gens, just like, let's do it. I'm going to do something that I wouldn't have normally chosen to do with my character. I'm taking bigger risks. I'm putting more.
Well, I've certainly got a reason not to like take a bigger risk with my character and throw them into the meat grinder. But also, even without that, while the cinematic adventure did provide a bunch of NPCs that a player could take over if their primary PC died or, you know, got exploded or whatever, from a game standpoint, that's a good thing to do because that means no one has to sit the rest of the session out.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I kind of wonder if it would be as satisfying depending on when the character died. Because, I mean, maybe you've been there with that for, what, like 1.5, 2 acts, and then suddenly you get a new character, like you're still playing, but it might not feel as I guess enjoyable.
Yeah.
So obviously in a campaign, players are going to be, yeah, more protective of their characters because you got a whole campaign to go through. Mm-hmm. But it might also be kind of like, oh, well, however much of this campaign we have left, I have that much time to get used to a new character mm-hmm. if this one dies. Whereas like a one shot, this three act thing, I'm not really invested in this character, but do I really want to swap
yes.
over?
Right. It was kind of a way to treat. There's a lot of instant death. There's a lot of mechanics that, depending on some of the choices during this cinematic adventure, you could just be gone. Just like, boom, you're dead.
We've obviously not made them or been really lucky with our dice rolls.
Right. So, and I think that's why they build that in, because it could happen as early as Act One. You could just like stumble right into something. It's like, okay, yeah, you're dead.
Gone.
Yeah. And especially like failed rolls with spacewalks and stuff, that gets a little tricky.
Bye. Yeah. One of the characters just like floats off. Yeah.
I think they do have that available. And I think you're right, like, especially in the third act, I don't think I want to force anybody, unless they really want to, unless they see something really fun to do, force anybody into an NPC. So I think we're going to be playing beyond the point of when the character should have, like, if anybody turns or anybody, right. you know, shows their
agenda. If anybody pulls a Paul Reiser.
Yeah, right. Anyway. So that they won't instantly turn PC. We'll just kind of let them, because if we've only got an hour left, there's no point in.
Well, depending on what happens, if you know you only have an hour left, I mean, it might not be that bad to just kind of like sit back and watch and see what happens to the rest of the players, or the rest of the characters rather, because hopefully none of the players are going to die. But yeah, that's one of my big pet peeves is intermixing those. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure you mean you killed their characters, not the players.
Yeah. How about any Kickstarters? Anything you saw online?
Despite saying I was swearing off Kickstarters, one just started that I've been waiting for a while. It's the Demigods Powered by the Apocalypse, Kickstarter by Jason Mills. It's, for lack of a better term, Percy Jackson. And I know he doesn't like that. But yeah, you are playing, or kind of like the White Wolf Scion, where you are playing half-mortal children of the gods. Mm-hmm. And when I say children, I don't necessarily mean teenagers or children. Like, you could be an adult, whatever. You are just one of your parents, or possibly even both, are a god. Mm-hmm. And all the gods are real. And in one of the actual plays he ran that was really, really good, anything that people believe in to a large enough degree essentially becomes a god. So there were gods of math and social media and like biological life sciences, in addition to kind of your classic pantheon of like Greek, Norse, and Egyptian, I think.
Right.
So I think it's really cool. I've been waiting for that for a while. And despite being 16 hours ahead of the rest of the world, missed the initial launch. But I mean, it's still, I was only like late by a couple hours. But I was like, yes, okay, finally being on the wrong side of the world is going to pay off this time. And I was asleep, so it didn't.
Right. Well, that's good. And so that just started. So you've
it just started. About
30 days. Yep. Nice.
Yeah.
I didn't see anything on Kickstarter, but there was the Bundle of Holding just came up. And I
considered that.
Yeah, it's a good opportunity to get a good deal on all of the Modiphius 2D20 Conan. So the Conan Adventures in an Age Undreamed Of, they're putting a huge selection of the books that have been already published.
Aren't there two bundles? There's the starter, and then there's the, if you go past the threshold price, you get these extra things. Mm-hmm. But that's one bundle. I believe they are running two simultaneous Conan bundles, where it's like, this one is the essentials and a couple map packs and other stuff. And this one over here is a whole mess of source books.
Yeah, because they've been, since the Kickstarter, they've been publishing, kind of slowly finishing each of the source books. So it's like, you know, Marauder and King Conan and like all of the
Conan the Pirate.
Right. So that's great. So I think if you're interested at all, and a lot of people, we didn't give a really glowing review, because we did kind of a movie review of the terrible Jason
Momoa. That's going to like sour in anything watching that piece of hot garbage. Image before our review,
and it was our first real look at the 2D20, like what they were doing new with the 2D20 system, and we weren't as positive. But after playing John Carter of Mars, I'm really excited to take another look and maybe run an adventure of Conan, because that setting is just it's just great.
I considered the same thing. I think the two bundles together, if you do the level up price, you're looking at about $50. You get like a whole bunch of stuff, and it's DRM free, so they can't yank your books after a while. But yeah, I considered it, and same thing. When I first read the Conan, I guess, core book, I wasn't all that impressed, because it felt very kind of traditional about, here are your stats that are kind of almost the same as what we always have. But after playing in the John Carter Mars game, I'm like, this game is actually kind of interesting. So I'm taking a hard look at that Conan bundle.
Yeah.
So if anyone wants to talk me down, please comment.
Right. Yeah, I think the character creation was kind of a turnoff, but I think once you get into the mechanics of things, hopefully it'll hold together like John Carter does. So
I'm especially interested in, I don't know what they call it in Conan and the 2D20, but there's the GM resource that to me felt a lot like the Doom pool. Mm-hmm. From Cortex Plus Marvel Heroic or the upcoming Cortex Prime, where the GM kind of banks this resource,
yes,
which they can then spend to have unfortunate things happen to your character.
Right, right.
And I really like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So I think that they're doing a good job with that, the 2D20 flavor, you know, based on kind of the flavor, like Star Trek uses it, Star Trek Adventures, and Conan uses it, and they kind of... It's customized and tailored to fit the themes and the setting much more. And I think we were just, maybe for that original, the version that they used in Conan, we were hoping it to be grittier and harsher and just a little rougher. And it didn't seem like that. It seemed cinematic, but it didn't seem as blood and guts as like, you know, as reading Robert E. Howard does.
Oh, really? Interesting. Because I mean, come on, let's be honest. Conan's pretty much invincible. Right. I mean, he gets beat the hell up. And sometimes you think, you never really think he might die. But I mean, yeah, people are dying left and right, usually at his hand or other things. But I wonder if they did that so that your characters survive a bit longer, because do you really want to have to roll up characters again?
Right.
And by roll up, I mean make characters. You don't actually have to roll.
That's definitely worth taking a look at if you were interested in that game at all, because it's an easy way to get in. Otherwise, if you go to Modiphius, even their PDF bundles on their shop are pretty pricey. This is definitely a cheaper way to go. So a comment that we got that I thought was a comment and an offer.
Oh,
Have you heard of Tears of a Machine?
I have not.
It's a Powered by the Apocalypse.
Then how have I not heard of it?
Giant robots, teens powering giant robots. So kind of Evangelion or
back on Netflix,
later maybe Gundam, like a little bit more emotional kind of teen angsty, the later seasons of Gundam, those sorts of things. But so inspired by anime. So anime inspired giant robots and the teenagers who pilot them. So it was kickstarted back in 2013. And one of our subscribers said, you guys should play this.
Interesting.
And I'll run it.
Cool. Okay.
So I think that's a very tempting offer. So he said on Fantasy Grounds, he's got that set up. So
cool.
We may be talking to Alex in the future about
Handle, Alex in the future?
Yeah, Alex in the future. So Tears of a Machine is written by Russell Collins. It's available on his website. I'll put a link to that as well. I like that setting. I don't think everybody in Idle Red Hands is a fan of anime teen angst. But
teenagers, I'm there. Anime, my foot's like halfway out the door.
Right.
I say that, but yeah, I lose my nerd cred here. I never finished Evangelion. I have never watched any Gundam at all.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, you can't escape from it here in Japan. I mean,
yes, right.
I've been posting pictures of the cans of coffee I get in the morning that are plastered with Gundam robots.
Right. So. Yes. Yeah. Gundam is a national treasure in Japan. That's crazy. It's interesting that series has kind of changed to fit the kind of current. I mean, it's not doing so well recently, but you know, you watch 40-year-olds just like stop and stare at a monitor. Yeah, Gundam is pretty straightforward, and they came up with like the systems to pilot the machine started to kind of tap into your emotions, so you would like have these like weird psychic connections with the people you're facing, so you had to confront issues with your parents and stuff while you're trying to kill somebody.
Well, I mean, honestly, that makes it more interesting than just wailing on people with giant robots. Even Pacific Rim kind of did something similar.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe not with the kaiju you were fighting, but with your pilots.
And I've actually heard somebody say that, you know, teens as heroes, teens as pilots of the mecha and everything is what the big difference between American and Japanese kind of, you know, comic book culture is, because the hero, the idea of the hero, you are superpowered. You are given these gifts and magically, you know, you, the individual, are the hero. The way that story is told is usually with kids, and much less often it's kids. I guess more recently they've kind of, you know, de-aged Spider-Man and everyone, but it's usually adult heroes. So those ideas don't translate. The Marvel superhero movies don't work as well in Japan. They know that pop culture, but as far as like connecting, they connected as kids to those kid pilots. And so the kid as hero is a much more common trope in Japan. So they see that much more. And I don't think they relate to, you know, adult heroes.
Huh. Interesting. I wondered if it was because perhaps more so than American culture, once you become an adult in Japan, stuff gets pretty stratified. Like you are working that 9 to 5 or 8 to 10, whatever job at an office building. And like, that's going to be it.
Right.
So you don't really get to make a whole lot of choices. And prior to that, as a teenager, is when you kind of have the most freedom. No data on that to back it up. It's just an assumption.
No, but I think that makes a lot of sense, because that would explain the kind of regressive nature of the escapist entertainment. It's always young. You're always going back to high school or junior high school. And that's what it becomes problematic, because depicting girls of that age and, you know, those are the memories, your first memories of girls and things, that becomes a little problematic when you're a 40-year-old salaryman that's your ideal. But no, I think that's a really good point, because your life is kind of over. Once the company hires you, your life is over, and you, to escape, you go back to that time. And of course you want to be the hero pilot, you know?
After this discussion, can't wait to go back to work after we finish recording this. Yeah.
So go back to dead.
Go back to my little coffin desk.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was nice. So we'll get in touch with Alex and see.
I'm definitely going to look at that, because it's PBTA. I always look at everything that's PBTA, although I've learned my lesson that it's not always good.
Mm.
And it wasn't saying that Tears of the Machine is not good, because I haven't looked at it yet.
Right. So. Yeah, it's got nice art, very reminiscent anime art. And the setup is very traditional. It's like aliens hiding behind the moon, or like launching, you know, evil robots at the Earth, and, you know, you're set to defend the Earth as kids.
So, and that's when it actually makes sense, where it's kind of difficult to stop instead of just building a wall around that stupid rift in the Pacific.
That's magically, they just crash through. I love that in the first Pacific Rim. It's like, the wall, oh, it didn't hold.
Here's an idea. How about we just build the wall around it and stand there with swords? Because apparently that's what they're weak against. Yeah.
Right. Somebody made an interesting point about the sequel, that they kind of screwed up the whole idea of Pacific Rim. Because the first way that they shot the mechs, and they kind of made them slow and lumbering, and they shot very low. So you're on the ground watching these battles.
You're talking the Pacific Rim 1.
Yeah, Pacific Rim 1. Yep. And then for the second one, it's in the bright sunlight, and they're kind of, the camera's doing that computer thing, which is like swinging around.
Oh, so it looks like the first Transformers.
Yeah, right. Where you don't get the sense of scale. You don't get how much actual weight is moving around. It just looks like Transformers. And it changed the whole feeling, because it had a nostalgia. When you're like looking up at these things, it made it very nostalgic.
Well, that's also, I guess bringing it back, that's also a way to kind of do tension. Well, yeah, I remember watching the first Pacific Rim, and you get a sense of how big and slow moving these things are. Mm-hmm. And like sometimes when, you know, just one of them like over punches, you're like, what, that's going to take you a while to correct. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that kind of increases the tension. Like, okay, are you going to be able to like bring it back around in time? Mm-hmm. Or it kind of felt like the classic like lumbering tank versus kind of like the quicker aliens from StarCraft, for lack of a better word. So that's kind of what they look like. Mm-hmm. Or even just aliens in general.
So how can people find you?
On Twitter, where I live. Hivemind, HYVEMYND. My Fantastic Fate Patreon. July's reward is going to be an Aboleth and a bunch of kind of psychically dominated servitors for the pack. That goes to supporters at the end of July, and it goes public at the end of August. And that's FantasticFateResources.com or Patreon/FantasticFateResources.com.
And of course, Idle Red Hands is at IdleRedHands.com. If you want to support the podcast, give some input, help us grow and get involved in the content, tell us what to look at and what you like to hear, please visit patreon.com/IdleRedHands. You can follow us on Twitter at @IdleRedHands. Take a look at the Instagram. Occasionally there's things there. And definitely take a look at the YouTube channel if you want to see the last session of the Alien actual play, which is happening tonight. That's it for this week. We'll be back again next week. Bye.
Bye.